another episode of Radio Yesterday, brought to you by ChuckChat.com.
Information, please. Wake up, Mr. and Mrs. America. Time to stump the experts. The battle royal between the public and the experts is on again, in which the much-quizzed public turn the tables and quiz the experts. In this new national pastime, you get the opportunity to try and flunk the professors who have always tried to flunk you. Sounds good, doesn't it? Well, to make the revenge taste even sweeter, if you succeed in flunking the experts, you will be rewarded with a $5 prize. If you want to take part in this new popular national game, here's how it's done. Send us questions and the correct answers. If acceptable to our editors, they will be presented to a board of experts for the first time during each broadcast. Questions accepted will win $2 each for the person who submits them, and any questions the experts cannot answer will be rewarded with an extra $5. The contest of the public versus the experts will be refereed by Dr. John Erskine. Ladies and gentlemen, I present Dr. John Erskine.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We have before us in the studio an intelligent audience and four brave men who will try to answer any question asked by anybody in the United States. You've just heard them called experts. That name will do for the present. The four experts this evening are Franklin P. Adams, columnist of the New York Post, Marcus Duffield, day news editor of the Herald Tribune, Bernard Jaffe, head of the physical science department of the Bushwick High School, and John Kieran, sports columnist of New York Times. Mr. Kieran is our special guest of honor. He'll get the hard questions. Each of these experts is at home in his field and ambitious in all the others. Mr. Adams is a great reader of books. He is also a writer of books. I don't refer to the same books. He is also an expert in tennis and pocket billiards, as he confessed here last week. And since you read his column, you know he translates Horace from time to time and is fiendishly adroit in detecting a misprint or a mistaken spelling. In appearance, he is solemn, if not sinister. He sits nearest to me at the end of the line. And this evening, he's wearing a gray suit and a blue tie, which stands for truth. Mr. Duffield is remarkably informed about current events, but I understand that archaeology and prize fights have each an appeal for him. And when he is bored with politics, he reads science for relaxation. He sits at the other end of the line. In appearance, he is youthful and optimistic. And this evening, he wears a dark greenish suit with a grayish shirt and a brownish tie. Mr. Jaffe, who sits next to him, really knows science, but he is prepared to throw light on literature, music, sculpture, and poker. In appearance, he is youthful but settled, and he wears a brown suit with a light brown tie, which doesn't mean anything. Mr. Kieran, our guest of honor, is, as you know, a sports columnist. He sits next to Mr. Adams. That is, if you know the natural tendency of sports columnists, he is probably on the way to be a dramatic or literary critic, an authority on social, political, and economic questions, and on off days a humorist. I stand in awe of him. In spite of his gray hair, he has the eager look of the insatiable young. And he can ask pointed questions as well as answer them. He wears a brown coat this evening with a spotted brown tie, which means the sporting spirit. These experts haven't seen the questions in advance. The questions will be addressed to all of them. Any one of them may raise his hand. If the question is composed of more than two parts, the four experts may consult among themselves. If any question or any part of a question is answered incorrectly, $5 is forfeited. When you hear the cash register ring, you will know $5 is being paid out to the lucky questioner. If there's any money left at the end, the experts will share it as a bonus. Here in the studio, a number of people are waiting to ask the questions they sent in. Questions received from out-of-town listeners will be presented by your chairman. Just a second now. You hear that sound? That's the experts, the brains of the experts, beginning to click. And here's the first question from Mr. Fred Peyton Green of Buffalo, New York. The following questions refer to well-known old-time songs. Answer any four of them. First, what was everybody doing in the song, Everybody's Doing It? Second, what happens after the ball is over? Third, where did Boys and Girls Together trip the light fantastic? Four, into what vehicle was Josephine invited in the song, Come Josephine? Five, upon what seat, where she looked sweet, was Daisy invited to sit? Now, can you remember those questions, children, or shall I read them again?
Read them again.
Number one, Mr. Adams speaks for the board. What was everybody doing in the song, Everybody's Doing It? Two, what happens after the ball is over? Three.
Do them one at a time, and I'll get them. Do one at a time, and I'll answer them.
Fine. Mr. Adams volunteers. One, what was everybody doing in the song, Everybody's Doing It?
Turkey trot.
Correct. Two, what happens after the ball is over?
Many a heart is breaking.
Correct. It's aching, but that's near enough. Three.
What's the question?
Where did Boys and Girls Together trip the light fantastic?
On the sidewalks of NY.
Correct. Four. Into what vehicle was Josephine invited in the song Come Josephine?
In my flying machine.
Absolutely correct, and you have four.
Next glad question. To sing them.
Greg Fox.
I'd be very glad to sing all of them.
Mr. Adams, that's where we part. Next question from Miss Pauline Goldstein, Malden, Massachusetts. In what sports are the following terms used? Stymie, football, puddle, squeeze play, and puck.
Just call them over again and I'll answer them.
Karen will finish these off. Stymie.
And golf.
Football.
Tennis.
Puddle.
Football.
Squeeze play.
Baseball.
Puck.
Hockey.
That's very easy for me. I need the help of Mr. Adams. I'll ask him. Repeat in a loud voice these words. Hello, folks. It was a tough fight. Mr. Adams, if you please.
Hello, folks. It was a tough fight.
Now, here's the question. Who were the first to hear that statement made by Mr. Adams? The people sitting here in the rear of this studio or the people listening to this program in Los Angeles? Mr. Jaffe.
The people listening over in Los Angeles. You want the reason for it?
Yes. You don't need to give it, but we'd like to hear.
Well, I'll give the reason. Radio waves travel at a much faster pace than sound waves. In fact, sound travels 1,100 feet a second, and radio waves travel 186,000 miles a second.
Next question is from Mrs. Alice Gulizzi, Wadsworth, Ohio. Name four ex-sovereigns, each of whom now is a man without a country.
I'll try. I'll take a Mr. chance Duffy. On that, Mr. Dr. Erskine. Alfonso of Spain.
Right.
Edward the Eighth of England.
Very good.
Prajadhipok of Siam.
Right.
How about a little help there?
Yes, a little help. How about the Negus of Ethiopia?
Good idea.
Also the German Emperor.
Very well. That helps us out.
Ex-Emperor of Germany.
That's right. We include
that, too.
We have really have down on the list, but that's all right.
Four kings.
Four kings.
Good here.
Next question from Mrs. Walter Guile of New York City. Now, this is a good one. Why might a gentleman pass up a date with a melanochroic female? I will repeat the one important word, melanochroic.
How do you spell it?
M-E-L-A-N-O-C-H-R-O-I-C. Melanochroic.
I'd be afraid of her.
Mr. Adams, rising.
Well, never heard of her.
Mr. Kieran.
What kind of man would it be that would be afraid of meeting this woman?
Don't dodge the issue, Mr. Kieran.
Well, melano, that comes from the Greek meaning black, doesn't
correct.
It?
Correct. And what's the croic come from?
That's also a Greek word, I should say, on account of the CH in there, but what it means...
I told you, Mr. Kieran was a wonder, you see. He's up on the Greek.
But it's what the croic part means, I don't know, and I think when you don't know, it's a good idea not to keep a date with a woman.
Croic is what a bird does.
Well, I don't get the logic, but the general idea is correct. Does the board... All hands up. All right. I'll tell them for their information that the melano is all right. That means black or dark. And the croic means skin. And the name is applied by anthropologists to all dark-skinned people, and some gentlemen prefer blondes. Next question from Mrs. Wittich, Cleveland Heights, Ohio. Here are four streets, each of which is associated with a famous character of literature. Can you name three of them? First, Baker Street. Second, Wimpole Street. Third, Quality Street. Four, Main Street. Mr. Kieran again.
Why, just call them off.
First, Baker Street.
That's the residence of the famous detective in fiction, Sherlock Holmes.
That's right.
Now, the next one was what?
Wimpole Street.
Oh, well, that's Barrett.
Yes. Quality Street.
I'll skip that one. I'm not quite sure. But Main Street, of course, is your red-headed friend, novelist. What's his name?
Mr. Lewis.
That's
to you.
Well... You're right, Mr. Kieran. The Wimpole Street in the play on the Barretts and Quality Street, Barry's play. The character was Phoebe Throssell that you were dodging there. And the Kennicotts were the people in Main Street. Very good class. Next question from Mr. Robert... Mr. Robert Ensel, Weehawken, New Jersey. I spent my childhood and youth in Weehawken. I'm interested in this question. What man who later became president of the United States was defeated as candidate for vice president? What man who later became president of the United States was defeated as candidate for vice president? Mr. Duffy.
I believe it is Mr. John Adams, the second president. I think he ran as vice president in the beginning. Doesn't sound right, but
no,
judging by your luck.
I don't think so. Thought you were up on current events, Mr. Duffy.
Last oh, one. Sure. Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Well, that's quite right.
Yeah. Should have thought of that quicker.
He was defeated as vice president, and now he happens to be president. Now, Yes, one. To Mr. Jack Levine of Toronto, Canada. And he's here to ask it himself.
If someone went into a store and bought something made up of a piece of wood, blue coat, water, and the fruit of the theobroma tree, what would he get?
That's a stunning question. I'll read it again to see if I understand it. If someone went into a store and bought something made up of a piece of wood, blue coat, water, and the fruit of the theobroma tree, what would he get?
I think I have it. I'd like to have it anyway.
Mr. Johnson.
It's a nice big lollipop.
That's right. Mr. Jaffe forgot to tell us the flavoring. It would be chocolate flavored. But that was pretty close. Now, so far, the penalties are very light, the class are holding out. Is that five? We've lost $5 so far. the questioners have won five so far. Now, what would be the correct strategy in the following imaginary play of football? You are receiving a kickoff just behind your own goal line. The ball bounces off your hands and rolls to a stop in the end zone. Should you fall on it, run it out, or let it alone?
Well, it doesn't make you should fall on it.
Why?
You shoot the last
one. That is.
Well, it's a touchback.
Yes.
There's no play on it.
Correct. Now he rises to another realm entirely. I don't know whether we rise. This is a question from Mrs. Priscilla LaPalla, New York City. Give the names of famous philosophers whose names rhyme with the following. Tomato, Barbara Frietchie, Bottle, Whiskey Sour, and Snooty Dane. Try them one by one, I think.
How many do you want there? Four?
How many names do you want?
Well, the question asks for the names. How far can you go? Just add it.
What is the first one?
Tomato.
Plato.
Correct. Want the second? Barbara Frietchie.
Nietzsche.
Right. Bottle for the third.
Aristotle.
Right. Schopenhauer.
Ha! You win.
Right. Snooty Dane.
I imagine that's William James.
You're correct, and I apologize. You would have been correct on the other. Now, is an oxygen tank necessary to sustain human life in the troposphere? This question comes from Edward Harrington, Philadelphia,
Pennsylvania. I'll take that, Dr. Raskin.
Mr. Jaffe.
An oxygen tank is not necessary in the troposphere. The troposphere extends to a height of about 5 or 6 miles, and life can be sustained without oxygen there.
Wow. Class is very solid tonight. Next question from Miss Margaret Lawrence, New York City. Name a poet, a prize fighter, and an aviator whose names are strikingly appropriate to their profession. A poet, a prize fighter, and an aviator whose names are strikingly appropriate to their profession. Try the poet first.
Well, there was a poet named Akenside.
I'll rule that correct.
I have the aviator, Dr. Mason. Frank Hawks.
Pardon?
Frank Hawks for the Aviator.
Great. We still have a prize fighter.
Prize fighter. Well, I don't know whether he's a prize fighter or not, but he goes in the ring, and his name is Bear, Max Bear.
I don't think that qualifies, Mr. Kieran. There's a penalty, I think.
Well, I think there's a fighter. He's not very good one named Stryker.
You don't mean Hitler.
I'm registered Hitler on the past, just for luck. I'm reminded I should tell you what we were fishing for here. A prize fighter named Armstrong.
That's a better name for a detective.
Next question. I think to be asked from the studio, I'm not sure, Mr. Wally Freed of New York. Mr. Freed.
Will you name the Supreme Court justice appointed by President Roosevelt in his first administration and one in his second administration?
Question is, can we name a Supreme Court justice appointed by the President Roosevelt in his first administration and an appointment in his second administration?
I think I
Mr.
can
Kieran.
Answer it. I'll try anyhow. I'll give the second one first. I'm sure of that. That's Justice, Mr. Justice Black. And I think that Mr. Justice Cardozo was appointed during his first term. Well, I'm one error.
One error. Very sorry.
One hit.
No appointments in the first administration. Mr. Hoover appointed Mr. Cardozo. And in the second administration, I think the question was a little bit tricky. I should say so. It was Mr. Black. There's also Mr. Reed, was there not? And there are two in the second administration, none in the first. Next question. Miss Helen Rugin, New York City. She offers us the following unfamiliar second stanza of a very famous poem, and we're going to ask the experts to supply the first stanza. Now, this is the second stanza. One day she went upstairs when her mother, unawares, was in the kitchen, occupied with meal, and she stood upon her head in her little trundle bed, and then began haranguing with her heels. First stanza. That's the second. They're all shaking their heads. Never heard of it in their lives. Give up?
Give up.
Yes, sir.
Give up. There was a little girl, and she had a little curl. The experts look particularly blank. I'll give them a moment to recover. Here's a question from Mr. Luke Raviella from Aston, New York. Select four of the following and tell us what sort of creature each one is. Now listen carefully. Number one, the laughing jackass. Two, the titmouse. Three, the ladybird. Four, the chuckwill's widow. And five, the brown creeper. Mr. Kieran.
You have to tell all five of them?
No, select four.
All right, you call them all.
Number one, the laughing jackass.
That's a bird.
A bird, correct. Two, titmouse.
Well, that's another bird.
Correct.
Right around here.
Three, ladybird.
I beg your pardon? I beg your pardon?
Three, ladybird.
I don't know that
I
one.
I know that one.
Mr. Jaffe.
That's a beetle.
Correct, Mr. Jaffe. The chuckwill's widow.
That's the southern equivalent of our whippoorwill of this area.
Correct. And five, brown creeper.
A brown creeper is a small accessorine bird that feeds on insects.
absolutely correct. And I don't know how, with so much brains in the class, we have piled up a total number of penalties, $20 so far.
Easy come, easy go.
Next question. From Mrs. Herbert J. Hayes, Waterbury, Connecticut. With what person do you associate each of the following phrases? Number one, the little flower. Two, the greatest showman on earth. Three, the Swedish nightingale. Four, the Wizard of Menlo Park. And five, Old Hickory. The whole class, but who put up your hand first, children? I didn't see. Was it Mr. Duffield there? Or Mr. Duffield?
I'll try it.
Number one, the little flower.
Fiorella LaGuardia.
Number two, the greatest showman on earth.
The Barnum.
Number three, Swedish Nightingale.
Florence, Well, go on to the next. I'll think of her when I come back.
Four, the Wizard of Menlo Park.
Thomas A. Edison.
Five, Old Hickory.
Andrew Jackson.
And three, the Swedish Nightingale.
Oh, you're back there again.
Let's think it together.
Jenny Lynn. Just wrote an impromptu duet for Mr. Garrett, Mr. Adams. Next question.
The Nightingale to the Bronx.
From Mr. C.F. Smith, Brooklyn, New York, and I think he's here.
Explain three of the following slang expressions, telling the game from which it was derived. One, behind the eight ball. Two, he couldn't get to first base. Three, ace in the hole. Four flesher.
I'll read the question again, though if I had time, I'd argue with Mr. Smith as to whether they are slang expressions. I believe they are professional and highly technical. The first is behind the eight ball. Second, he couldn't get to first base. Third is ace in the hole. Four is four flusher, and the jury of the class are asked to explain the meaning of three of them.
I yield to Mr. Adams.
Mr. Kieran yields to Mr. Adams.
Behind the eight ball is supposed to come from pool, but it doesn't. It comes from a game called eight ball, which is a black ball and roughly stymies the player. What's the other one?
The next is he couldn't get to first base.
That comes from the game of American baseball.
Ace in the hole.
Stud poker.
And four flusher.
Draw poker.
And what does it mean?
Well, it's supposed to mean a man who is pretentious. And who hasn't got that's all correct. The cards.
That's correct. We have one more question here, and the time's getting short. I think you'd like to hear this from Mr. Jack Lippman, Brooklyn. I think he's here. Is Mr. Lippman here? Not, I'll read his question. Which of the following foods contains the highest percentage of water? Milk, macaroni, or oysters?
The oyster.
Mr. Jaffe is right. We now know whether to begin the meal with milk or oysters, or feed the child oysters or milk. Penalties, total penalties, too, 20, and I must hurry on and tell you that we have no more questions for tonight. Total penalties, 20. I offer you our thanks. Members of the board, all the folks that have submitted questions. Mr. Cross has a word for you about next week's contest. Good night, everybody, and come again.
Thank you, Dr. Richard. We meet again next week for another metal tug-of-war with Mr. Clifton Fadiman officiating. The board of experts will include FPA, Franklin P. Adams, Marcus Duffield, Bernard Jaffe, and our guest of honor, Mark Connolly, author of Green Pastures. This is the National Broadcasting Company.